Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, the latest installment of Nagler's Never Right here at CheeseheadTV.com, our NFL podcast, although it sometimes has a Packers bent. But today, we're looking at the NFL as a whole. We're looking at the whole league with one of the best guys to cover that league, Mr. Greg Bedard, now of Sports Illustrated, making the move from MMQB.com over to SI Proper. We'll ask him about that, as well as the draft and all host of other stuff. Thanks for tuning. You know what? I'm not even going to stop and restart. I was doing so well, and then I screwed that up. But you know what? I don't care. Here's Greg Bedard on Nagler's Never Right.
You ain't nothing but a hound dog. Been snooping around the door. You ain't nothing but a hound dog. Been snooping around the door. You can wag your tail, but I ain't gonna feed you no more. You told me you was...
Well, there he is, the man who needs no introduction. But I'll introduce him anyway, because that's the kind of guy I am. Mr. Greg Bedard, Sports Illustrated, in the house. Greg, how the hell are you today?
Friend of years, friend of tears. How we doing, Aaron?
I'm doing well. Thanks a lot for, you know, taking a few moments out of your very busy schedule. I know you're coaching up some 8-year-old softball and baseball. Taking the time for Nagler's Never Right, the podcast, it means a lot to me.
Well, you know, I've seen the ratings. I've heard the buzz. I had to get on here.
That's exactly what it is. So before we get into our football talk here, what's going on with you? I know you dropped this mini bombshell on the eve of the draft about your soon-to-be move to Sports Illustrated proper from the MMQB. What's going on, buddy?
Well, you know, the timing of the announcement, I figured I just wanted to be like the NFL and, like, drop something, like, right before.
Exactly. You wanted to get lost in the wash. I know what you're doing.
Yeah, I wanted to see what the NFL does. So, I'm making it's a minor shift. You know, I am going to the magazine and SI.com from the MMQB. It's just an opportunity for me to sort of, you know, branch out a little bit from Peter King, who casts a very long shadow, as he should, because he's the best in the business. And this gives me a chance to make or further my name a little bit more. And I'm looking forward to it. I'm going to bring a lot more football writing to the magazine, sort of filling the role of, you know, Dr. Z and Peter, them having that for a while. And So I'm extremely excited to see what the future brings. It should be interesting.
Well, I'm very excited to see it. See your work going forward. Obviously, that's why I call you. Best in the biz yourself. Let's dive right into it. Let's look at these top two quarterbacks taken 1-2 in the draft. If you look at both of these guys and the positions that they have landed in, I know prior to the draft you wrote your where guys should go mock draft, and you had Mariota going number one overall. He doesn't here. He goes to number two, to the Titans. Where do you think this kind of leads for both of these guys, both this season and in, you know, the next few seasons to come, both with Winston and Mariota? How do you see this playing out?
Well, in the immediate future, I think Winston has more initial success. I think, you know, that line is a little challenging. That offensive line is a little challenging there in Tampa, but you know, I think they have a chance to be okay, or at least decent, and just give Winston enough time to throw it up to, you know, Evans and Vincent Jackson and Stavarian Jenkins at tight end. You know, he's got some tools to work with. Mariota in Tennessee, I would say that's a lot more of a challenge. I think they both would have been better served flipping places, because I think that when you look at Dirk Cutter, who's the offensive coordinator at Tampa, and also the quarterback coach that he brought in, both those guys have a lot of experience with not exactly the spread offense. Well, certainly a quarterback coach does, but, you know, mobile quarterbacks in different systems. You know, Cutter was, if I remember correctly, I think he was an assistant at Oregon before, you know, even Chip Kelly and everything got there. But it came from the same Mike Bellotti tree. And then, you know, you look at Tennessee and Ken Wisenhunt. Historically, he's had more quarterbacks that look like Jameis Winston. but they flip-flopped. But I think that both guys, as long as Winston handles himself off the field, as long as he is able to deal with success in the NFL, because it's one thing to come out, and I wouldn't be surprised if he's NFL Rookie of the Year, but how do you deal with that first offseason after that? But I think, you know, I'm a big fan of both quarterbacks on the field. I think that Mariota has been shortchanged by a lot of people. I think he's capable of a lot more than just that Oregon offense. And I think we're going to see, this is not a case where one quarterback's a success and one's a flop. I think they're both going to be very good in this league.
I agree with that sentiment wholeheartedly. Going over to Atlanta, I know you wrote something on Dan Quinn for the MMQB and the Falcons, obviously. What did you think of their draft? Because I got to admit, I was surprised how much I liked it. I thought, you know, they had a kind of a rough start to the offseason, I thought, in regards to, I don't know, everything that played out in the front office and then the coaching search, etc. Obviously, they got their guy in the end. But I really liked this draft, and I really like kind of the players that they got, their temperament, and I'm really excited to see these guys with Dan Quinn.
Yeah, Aaron, I think, you know, when you talk about the Falcons draft, I agree with you. I thought their draft was, you know, it looks really good on paper. I'm not the biggest Vic Beasley fan. He's a guy that I saw in person 2 years ago against South Carolina when I went to go see Clowney play. And you certainly notice him. He certainly jumps off the page, but he's a bit of a one-trick pony. He is not very good against the run at all. And
That's true.
And I don't care how good you are getting to the passer. You know, if you can't stop the run, they're just going to run at you every single time they see you out there, and they're just going to start plowing down the field. He needs to get a lot stronger. He needs to be a much better two-way player, or else he's going to be nothing better than a situational pass rusher in this league. And is that worth it at the eighth overall pick? You know, I don't think so. Some people might actually argue with that, but I agree with you. I thought their draft was strong. If I'm not mistaken, this was the first draft in Atlanta where Scott Pioli had a heavy hand in it, if not directed the entire thing.
What, I know. I mean, that's what I've read. I mean, I don't know how, you know, it's impossible to really know how much validity there is to that. But yeah, that's the kind of the word around the campfire, I think.
Yeah, and it's interesting. I mean, you talked about their offseason, starting with the big changes, and I agree with you. I thought, you know, even though I like him very much personally, I think Thomas Dimitroff, you can't come across much better people in the NFL. I was very surprised that he survived all of this.
Yeah, me too.
Because I think a lot of it, if not all of the Falcons' problems, were his doings. And you can draw some of it back to the Julio Jones trade, that he put too much eggs in that bucket. And, you know, look, the offensive line fell apart. They had no pass rush. The secondary had to be rebuilt. You know, most people with that record, they would have gotten fired. But he didn't. We'll see if they could turn it around. I think the world of Matt Ryan, I think he's a terrific quarterback. And if you have that, you should be competitive, and maybe this gets them back to it.
Well, I think my favorite pick for them in that draft was Grady Jarrett dropping down to the fifth round. He's a guy I really wanted for the Packers, and I just kept watching him drop. And it's funny because he's a guy who kept catching my eye when I was watching Vic Beasley tape. You mentioned Beasley and his one-trick pony, and Jarrett's his own one-trick pony, but I love that trick.
He's a little bit like Daniels from Green Bay, wouldn't you say?
Very much. Well, he's just got an insane first step. And if it hits, it can be extremely disruptive. Now, if it doesn't hit or if they power him, then he's in trouble. But, I tell you, he's got a quick first step that can cause a whole lot of havoc.
Yeah, and in Atlanta, I mean, you know, he'll fit in sort of the three technique role, and they could certainly use that. I don't know if he's a, you know, one shade player,
right,
like he did a little bit in college. But, you know, if there's anybody who's going to use him correctly, you know, it's Dan Quinn, a guy that, you know, has been on my radar, and I've I've been around him since he was on Nick Saban's staff at the Dolphins way back when.
That's going way back. Set the way back machine for that one. You know, speaking of stuff that you've written recently, you also wrote about Randy Gregory. Obviously, lots of drama here playing out over draft weekend. He lands in Dallas. You know, obviously you can't completely divorce him and his work on the field with the off-the-field narratives, but looking at the defense in Dallas and the fact that he's going to, you know, a defense coached by Rob Marinelli, how do you think Rod and company kind of harness this talent in that Dallas defense?
Well, I'd say, you know, the most important thing is going to be how they deal with his off-field issues, including, you know, if the whispers or rumors, I don't know what's been reported, but I guess, you know, there's been talk of mental health issues and things like that. And those are obviously very serious. And, you know, if anybody's going to get him the right help, it's going to be Jerry Jones. Now, he's dealt with this in the past. Demetrius Underwood, Alonzo Spellman, not exactly successfully. So the Cowboys in the past haven't exactly been successful at this. But I will say this, you know, about Jerry and the Cowboys as it relates to Gregory off the field. You know, Dez Bryant was a guy that when he came out, I said I wouldn't touch him with a 10-foot pole. And obviously I was wrong. And a lot of teams had Dez Bryant off the board. But what the Cowboys were able to determine was that Dez Bryant, at his heart, he loved football. He loves playing football. And I see a lot of that in Randy Gregory. When I studied Randy Gregory, I didn't want to like him. And when I first turned on the first tape of the first game last year against FAU, I saw him. He looked like a drama queen. He was flopping around. you know, I got hurt. I got held. I got this. Right, I was like, oh, geez, right. Here we go again.
Yep.
Another one of these millennial talents who, you know, everything's got to be set up on a tee for them. But the more I watched, the more I really liked Randy Gregory on film. He chases the ball all over the field. He never stops working. He'll make sacks for me and on the ground. So to me, that showed me this guy, you know, really loves the game. And I'm sure the Cowboys saw that, and they saw, you know, some of Dez in him. So, you know, with that, I think guys like Underwood and Spellman, I don't think that they had that, which I think contributed to their lack of success. And I think that can go with, you know, any draft prospect. If these guys don't love the game, they're not going to be good players. It's just the bottom line. I don't care what kind of natural athletic ability they have. But I think, you know, there's certainly the potential there. I mean, I think, in my opinion, Randy Gregory was by far the best pass rusher in this draft. And he was better on the edge than a lot of people wanted to give him credit for. A lot of times he played out of position. You know, Nebraska had him, you know, playing down inside a little bit. And that's just not his game. You know, let him get on the edge. Let him get his long arms locked out against the run. And he can do a good job. And, you know, I'm excited to see what he can do, because in my mind, I mean, he was a top 10, top five talent in this draft. And it's just, you know, all that off-field stuff, you know, certainly warranted the drop. But we'll see what Jerry Jones and the Cowboys can do about it.
Speaking of drops and top 10 talents, what do you make of this Lael Collins situation? I mean, I know everything that's led up to it in regards to his needing to talk to the police, and he hadn't, and then there were all sorts of conflicting reports about what getting drafted would mean, and he didn't want to be drafted. He was threatening to, you know, go into next year's draft, but then he couldn't, etc. And now the draft is coming gone, and he's undrafted. And I know there's reports overnight of Rex Ryan having dinner with him, and Jameis Winston today reportedly reaching out to this kid, and both teams, obviously the Bills and the Bucks, could definitely use this kid. But assuming he's cleared, and assuming the police say he is not a suspect after all that's been questioned, etc., and assuming he's free and cleared and there's no questions off the field, don't all 32 teams have to try and go after this kid?
No question. But, you know, it's, look, it was just, it was for Collins, if he didn't do anything, then this is just the worst timing, you know, ever. But, you know, he could still end up okay. I mean, you know, as an undrafted free agent, he can, redo his contract after 2 years, which he couldn't do as a draft pick. And, but, you know, I think that the NFL made the right call, or at least NFL teams did, in terms of letting him, you know, go through the draft undrafted. Because, look, my first thought was, when I heard about this, was, and the cops were saying he's not a suspect at this time, my first thought was, well, the cops told us that about Aaron Hernandez. Mm-hmm. When Odin Lloyd was first, his body was first found. He told Pete Thamel and I that, and when we were reporting for Sports Illustrated. So, you know, things can change, and, you know, maybe he has an alibi. You know, a whole bunch of different things can happen. But, you know, this investigation needs to be able to run its course. I think it's a little bit... you know, in my mind, it's a little bit bad taste by, you know, Rex Ryan and some of these people to be, you know, courting him already. It's okay to be, you know, checking in on him. But, you know, until the police say he is cleared as a suspect, then they need to stay the hell away from him, because it just looks desperate. It looks pathetic. And, you know, who knows? You know, Rex Ryan's not an investigator. At least I hope not. He might think he is, but
I mean, hell,
knowing him,
Greg, the headlines we're reading over the past, you know, 6 months, I don't think anyone in the NFL is an investigator. But we'll get to that. We'll get to that a little later.
Yeah, but just leave the guy alone until they clear him as a suspect. Can you wait? Can you not be desperate enough to, like, you know, go kissing his feet?
Rex Ryan. I mean, Rex Ryan never met a desperate situation he didn't want to dive headlong into, you know? I mean,
I know. I'm all about, you know, I want to make my football team better, and I'll do anything I have to do. I mean, he's done this in free agency. Who was it that he camped out on?
Oh, no. I don't remember, but I remember that
I forget.
Story.
It's right, somebody from the Ravens, I think. Maybe not. But, you know, it's just slow your roll a little bit. You know, let's let him get cleared. You know, check in with the agent and stuff like that. Send him a text saying, like, hey, when all this clears up, we're really interested in you. But, you know, don't wine him and dine him yet. You don't know what's going to happen. And what right. if the worst happens?
Right.
All of a sudden, you look really bad.
Okay, speaking of investigations, and speaking of draft picks being investigated, supposedly by teams, what do you make of this situation out in Seattle with their selection of Frank Clark? You know, obviously lots, you know, it's making the rounds now. A couple years ago, John Schneider said, you know, point blank, they would never consider anyone who's laid their hands on a female. I love that he didn't even say on a woman. He said on a female. Thanks, John. And now they've obviously selected Clark, and they've said, oh, we did our due diligence. But now it's coming out this morning that they never even talked to the witnesses at the scene, etc. I mean, does anybody in the NFL know how to conduct an investigation? I mean, anybody? Does anybody in the league? I mean, for so many years, we heard about this crack NFL security. All the teams had these ex-FBI guys on staff.
And yeah.
The league office was just the top of the line. And story after story over the last 6-8 months tells us the exact opposite, that there's a lot of just bumbling nincompoops in charge of investigating things for teams and the league office.
Or so yeah, at least... Yeah, in my practice and in my experience dealing with some of these team FBI guys or seeing them on game day and around teams is a lot of them are older. They look like they had to take retirement or early retirement for some reason, maybe because they had some errors and were pushed out or something like that. But, you know, I wouldn't exactly call them crack staff. And, you know, big surprise that the NFL – has overconfidence about their ability to handle investigations and things like that. But that's a whole different topic. But yes, as far as this goes, without being too critical about it, because I want to hear all the facts first before I really slam the Seahawks like I want to slam them. You know, John Schneider and Pete Carroll and whoever else, their team security guy, they need to meet with the media out there, and they need to detail exactly what they did in terms of their investigation. No standing behind releases from the team about, like, we did a thorough background, we did this, blah, blah, blah. No, we need details. And if it leads to where I think it leads, which is they didn't do enough, the Seattle Seahawks should be ashamed of themselves. I'm disappointed in John Schneider, who, you know, we both know, and who is just an awesome guy, or whoever made the call on this pick, whether it's Pete Carroll or, you know, John. Because if the witness reports in the police reports are correct, that he definitely hit her, if not put his hands around her neck and slammed her to the ground in addition to that, and the Seahawks made him their first draft pick in the second round. I mean, it's ridiculous. If he did this in the NFL as an NFL player, based on what Sheriff Roger has done so far, you know, he's looking at an 8 to 10 game immediate suspension. As soon as the NFL's investigation runs a course, which is probably 5 years down the road, and he has to stay on the exempt list that long.
Yeah.
It's mind-boggling to me. I'm stunned. I'm stunned that if this is all true, that the Seattle Seahawks did this, and they just thought they were going to get away with it.
Yeah, I mean, it is a bit depressing. You see, again, like I said, the last 6 months or so, 8 months, it's just headline after headline of ineptitude, and it really kind of makes you despondent. But you point to Sheriff Roger. Well, Sheriff Roger is the one leading the way here, and we all know he's making it up as he goes along, and I guess the teams are kind of following his lead.
Well, I mean, without question. I mean, there's no real concrete policy. He said that I think he was going to, you know, there was the... Wasn't there, he announced the personal conduct policy after the Ray Rice thing, the change to it. But then he said they were going to change it again, which I don't... They were going to convene some sort of council.
The council. That was what... He dropped that at the press conference.
Yeah, and then they were going to release new findings and a new personal conduct policy sometime around the Super Bowl or after the Super Bowl. Mm-hmm. But we never got that. We just got...
We got
the investigation was.
We got two new members of the 345 Park Brigade, pretty much.
Yes.
Is what we got. All right. Like I said, that's depressing. Let's move back to football. And I know you're dying to talk about the Green Bay Packers draft. I know you can't get enough of the Green Bay Packers.
They're Packers. Yeah, they're awesome.
Yeah. Okay. Don't make me start doing my Boston accent. We don't know what it's like. Yeah, Shouterhead. Anyway, all right. If not just the Packers draft in general, what did you think of the move in the fifth round to trade up for Brett Hundley?
I didn't get it. I mean, even after the fact, after hearing Elliot Wolf talk, and didn't he basically say that it was the Patriots who called and said, like, hey, don't you want to move up? And
pretty kind of, yeah.
Bill put a Jedi mind trick over Ted and, like, you want to move up for a spot.
Every time Ted deals with Bill, Ted usually comes out on top. I will say that history is there.
This is true. Yeah, so. Clay Matthews and all that. Yeah, I mean, there's no question.
Greg Jennings over Chad Jackson. You know, these things, there's a history here. So I'm not too nervous about it, but I've got to admit, I'm with you. I didn't really get it, especially for Brett Hundley. I don't know. I guess fifth round, it's good time. I just think I don't think anyone, maybe even the Packers, realize how good Scott Tolzien is going to be in that offense. I mean, I know I'm out here on an island on this one, but after watching him last preseason, I mean, he's worlds better than Matt Flynn. Not that that's saying much, but you know, they've got their backup. So I guess
that's a good point. I mean, Tolzien I haven't seen very much. I liked him when he was at Wisconsin. I haven't seen him very much at all as far as I can remember back to last preseason, but you know, I'll take your word for it. In that case, it's even more puzzling, but you know, I don't mind it in this respect from, you know, sort of the Ron Wolf tree, which is basically draft a quarterback every year.
I hear you.
I mean, they're a commodity, and there's no question that if Brett Hundley's going to have a chance to be a successful NFL quarterback, he's going to have to go the Aaron Rodgers path, which is sit for 3 years and be instructed by McCarthy, because I think he has no shot outside of that, because I just, and I don't think he has much of a shot anyways. I just think he's got natural athletic abilities. He can make all the throws, but man, everything is just slow with him.
Yes,
from, you know, his footwork to his release to his, you know, progressions, everything. I mean, Mike, if there's anybody who's going to get him to speed up and be a good quarterback, it's Mike. And then, you know, if that happens, you know, who knows? Maybe you can flip him for a second-round pick, first-round pick, and, you know, it's worth it then.
And then Ted truly is the Jedi Master. I'll tell you
exactly.
That.
Exactly.
All right. We're talking to Greg Bedard here on Nagler's Never Right. Greg, you're an absolute legend for joining me here in your busy time. Just want to wrap things
I'm
up.
I'm not busy.
Yeah, you're so busy, man. You're so busy. Make it seem like you've really kind of moved heaven and earth to be on this podcast, dude. Come on.
Yeah, I definitely did that.
Yeah, well,
you know, I had to move a few things and tee times around and stuff like that. So you're lucky.
Yeah, well, you know, I like to call in my favors when I can. all right, so looking over the landscape, you know, we've run the off-season route now. We've gone through everything. We've gone through free agency. We've gone through the draft, etc. Obviously, injuries will play a big part. But as the landscape lays right now, who do you think are the favorites in each conference?
Somebody asked me this the other day, and I was like, "Man, I haven't even crossed my mind."
You got to be ready for this stuff. Come on, Tom Pelissero said he has to pick his Super Bowl champion like by the end of the week for the preview.
He did
for the preview magazine for USA Today. So get on it, Bedard.
good question. You know, I think that you know, when I look at the AFC, I think it's the Patriots to lose. In my opinion, I think that's an extremely strong team. Definitely has their weaknesses, and there could be some vulnerabilities. I think I can't buy into the Steelers yet. I mean, I think they'll be there, but that defense is just not good.
Yeah, the bookends of what Dupree and Jones. That's an interesting kind of shift from, you know, all the edge pressure they've had in the past, and now it's kind of all evaporated, and that's now their go-to twosome.
And then the secondary, they can't cover anybody. You know, I think the Ravens will obviously be there. In the NFC, you know, I think it's going to be between Seattle, Green Bay, and, you know, probably Dallas. I think you're talking about three, you know, excellent football teams right there. And, you know, if I had to say right now who I'm leaning towards, you know, I would pick Seattle to be the first team in the Super Bowl era to go to three straight Super Bowls.
For me and the Patriots, it's the secondary, because a big part of their getting to the Super Bowl last year, I thought, was the improvement on the defensive side of the ball and their ability to kind of shut the perimeter down. And without that, without Browner and Revis on the outside, I mean, I'm not saying that all of a sudden they're a bad football team. I don't think that's
right.
You know, anywhere close. But, man, I don't know. It's just because that's ultimately what kept them out of the Super Bowl the year before.
I disagree with that. I mean, I'll say that
If they have Revis and Browner, they don't win that game.
Yeah, but maybe. But the bigger problem was half their team was hurt.
Yeah, well,
They didn't have Gronk. They didn't have Mayo.
I hear you.
They were really beat up. They were like half a team in that game. And I said, you know, even if they stayed healthy, they beat Denver in that game without Revis, without Browner.
I don't know.
Bill Belichick can coach anybody up. I mean, I saw him make the Super Bowl in 2011 with Julian Edelman playing Anquan Boldin in the slot in the AFC Championship game. They have more than enough talent to get to the Super Bowl. I think they're a much tougher team than the Broncos. You know, they'll push them around like they normally do. And, you know, I think it'll be, you know, the Ravens certainly have a chance, but, you know, I think they're going to be very good. But, I just think the Patriots are, by the end of the season, they'll be, as usual, the most complete team in the league.
What about the Colts? What do you make of them? Because, I mean,
no.
You can't just go no. You got to admit they're at least intriguing.
they're terrible on the line, the defensive line, the secondary. Like, you know, Andrew Luck will probably still be throwing pick sixes and things like that. Look, you know, they're a good team. They play in a terrible division, so they're always, their record's always inflated. It's like, yeah, it's just like when Peyton was there. It's like the same thing every year. I mean, they almost win the division by default. Man, Andrew Luck is obviously very good, and they got him a lot of weapons. I just, that's one draft pick that I was like, when they drafted Philip Dorsett in the first round, I was like, what? Like, with Malcolm Brown and Goldman on the board, and their sieve interior on the defensive line, and how from center to right tackle they can't block anybody. I don't know what Ryan Grigson's doing there.
All of the wide receivers are for Andrew Luck. That's what he's doing.
Yeah, all of the receivers. I mean, he, you know, a lot of his free agent pickups.
You gotta like Frank Gore. You gotta like Frank Gore. Come on now.
Gotta like Frank Gore, and you gotta like Andre Johnson. And you know, if this was 2005, they'd be rocking and rolling. But they need someone to block. That's the most important thing.
I hear you.
They have to block, and so you know they'll be in the mix. I think the Texans will be, you know, a lot better. I think the Jaguars will be much improved.
Let me tell you this about the Jaguars. Last year, about this time, and then all summer long, I talked the Jaguars up saying they were going to be a tough out. I didn't think they were going to win a lot of games, but I thought they were going to be a much tougher football team than they ended up being. So I'm hands off, man. Fool me once.
Yeah, I think I said the same thing, or I might have said it 2 years ago, because I watched them in the preseason, and they played their tails off. And
reflection of their coach. You thought, okay,
yeah, and then, but then they got to the season, and it was just,
and I understand, rookie quarterback, offensive challenges, I get all that. But the defense, I mean, you look at the coach's tape, and they're trying to play cover three, and no one's, it's the most mind-boggling version of cover three you've ever seen. So I don't know if it was the pieces, or the lack of pieces, etc. But yeah, I'm all off the Jaguars until I see it. I get, they're a prove it to me team, because they burned me last year.
Yeah, I don't disagree with that, and I think that they made a mistake with Bortles last year, because I thought he regressed by the end of the season, and he's got to be revamped again instead of just letting the kid sit and getting fine tuned and then unleashing you know, a well polished product this year. You know, he certainly gained some experience last year and had his moments, but I don't know if it's going to be worth it in the end with them. I thought he needed to sit for the whole year, but you know, I like what Gus and Caldwell are doing down there. It's but they got to start having some success, or people might be moving on.
Exactly, it's the same old, same old. All right, Greg Bedard, Sports Illustrated, in the house here at Nagler's Never Right. Greg, can't thank you enough for the time, buddy.
Anytime, you know my number, and you know, hopefully we'll get to get. Are you coming up to the Cape?
Yeah, I'll be up there early August.
There we go. We got it. This time.
This time it'll happen.
We're having a beer.
Every year we say it. It never happens. This year, you and I, beers in the Cape.
We'll meet at a Bourne Cape Cod League baseball game. And
can't wait. That's excellent.
Yeah.
All right. Thanks a lot, Greg. Have a great day.
No problem. Anytime.